And call this meeting to order. Chris, would you take the roll, please?
Councilmember Cardoza. Council President Boobin Vonderhaar.
Here.
Councilmember McPherson.
Here.
Mayor Steer.
Here. And we are honored tonight to have Troop 808 to post the colors for us, so you may proceed.
Color guard, attention. Audience, please rise. Color guard, forward, march. Color guard, halt. Color guard, post the flag of the United States of America. Color guard, post the flag of the great state of Idaho. Color guard, honor your colors. Please recite the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Color guard, about face. Color guard, forward, march. Audience, please be seated.
Very nice. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, guys. That was great.
The first item on the agenda is the consent agenda. Is there any questions or comments? Motion to approve?
All right. If nobody has anything, I move we approve the consent agenda.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to approve the consent agenda. Is there any further discussion? Chris, would you poll the council?
Councilmember Cardoza?
Yes.
Council President Boobin Vonderhaar?
Yes.
Councilmember McPherson?
Yes.
And that motion carries. So we'll go to item 6A. This was a public hearing to consider the adoption of the CUNA Police Department impact fees. And so the staff had requested that we table the public hearing for this until May 7th so that we can finish compiling all the information for that. So I don't know if anybody was here tonight for that one in particular, but we just need a, you would, a motion.
I move we table the public hearing for the police capital improvements plan to the city council meeting scheduled to be held on May 7th, 2019.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to table the public hearing for the police capital improvement plan until the meeting on May 7th, 2019. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. That brings us to public hearing and consideration to approve 18-04-ZC rezone for Caspian Edition rezone. Troy?
Troy's pointing at somebody else.
Mayor, council members, my name is David Crawford. I'm with B&A Engineers. I'm here representing the applicant who is also here tonight. And if you give me just a few moments. I'm going to set up my easel really quick.
Sure. We're trucking right along.
Mayor, council members, we're here to discuss and to request an annexation to R6 of a little over 57 acres of land that is currently in the CUNA city limits, so it's a rezone. The land is located on the west side of Linder Road, north of Lake Hazel Road. It abuts a development that was approved in 2016 called Caspian Subdivision, and was zoned R6, and so we're here to request an R6 rezone, or rezone to R6 from agricultural use. The land is two lots within the Patriot Ridge Estates subdivision, and was previously platted under the old non-farm development. As you're aware, the city of CUNA, along with the developers in the area, have placed large mainline extensions of water, sewer, and pressurized irrigation to service the lands within this area. There's other developments in the area that are ongoing, such as a subdivision directly to the west of Caspian Addition and Memory Ranch to the southwest, and also another development on the southeast of Linder and Lake Hazel Roads. These were all possible because of the location of the sewer treatment plant facility and the large infrastructure developments that have been placed within Lake Hazel and 10 Mile Roads. We've recently seen the improvement of 10 Mile Road through the Ada County Highway District, along with participation from some of the developments in the area that have increased the width of 10 Mile Road as the arterial corridor into CUNA. We believe this area is prime for development. And that's the reason for our request to R6 zoning. We met with the Planning and Zoning Commission in February. They gave their unanimous approval for the rezone, or recommendation of approval to the rezone to R6, but they did place a limit on the density to 4.25 units per acre. Based on our initial findings, analysis of that site, any potential plat that would come forward, we believe we could meet those requirements with the R6 zone. There's a lot of discussion from neighbors in the area, both during the neighborhood meeting and also during the Planning and Zoning Commission hearing, and many of those are summarized in two letters that came before you prior to this hearing tonight. There are several items I'll summarize them because there's a letter dated March 26th from Jeremy Woodland that came in that provided an analysis on behalf of the HOA of the Patriot Ridge subdivision, mainly either regarding the connection to Jarvis Court. Jarvis Court is currently a public road that exists fronts on Linder Road, goes through the Patriot Ridge subdivision and dead ends in a cul-de-sac. There's a portion of that roadway that abuts our property near the northeasterly corner, approximately right there, if I can get that to work, right here. In our initial discussions with the Ada County Highway District, they have required that any future development provide a connection to Jarvis Court, as it's a public road. So much of that discussion is what items, let's see, C of that letter, D of that letter, F of that letter, G, and H, and also I. Much of what's discussed in here as well is related to traffic, increased traffic. Any type of connection in a public roadway system is going to increase traffic, particularly on a dead-end road. These types of decisions may fall outside of the purview of the development and rely strictly on the administrating body, such as the County Highway District or the City of CUNA, which may require that connection to increase safety through the connection of public roads. We recognize that it's not always the best for the neighbors that have ended up on a dead-end street or a cul-de-sac. They've enjoyed a quiet roadway. But as development occurs, these are kind of the policies of the highway district to require those things. We believe that our project is R6 zoning. The request for R6 zoning is simply so that we can meet a more diverse standard within these developments to have a mix of housing types and lot sizes, so we don't get stuck with all smaller lots or all larger lots. And so typically our developments that come in under the R6 zoning, we limit them to, or they typically come in between 3.5 and 4 units to the acre. The Planning and Zoning Commission has capped our ability to increase under the R6 zoning beyond that to 4.25 per acre. In another letter dated March 25th from Allison Woodland, there's some more discussion about Jarvis Court. And also, there's indication in that first paragraph, since the property in question should be held in the same CC&Rs as our existing street. The property should have similar lot sizes and be held to the standards that are expected of the residents Patriot Ridge neighborhood. The development that we're requesting here is within the city of CUNA. The lots that are within the resubdivision of these lots essentially becomes the standard of the city of CUNA to dictate what goes on in that area. While I believe that we'll provide at the appropriate time when a development plan is actually implemented or presented to the city of CUNA, we'll also have CC&Rs with architectural controls and other things that would be consistent with other developments in the area, and we may integrate some of those items from the CC&Rs of Patriot Ridge. There is always maintenance obligations when you're dealing with CC&Rs, and because Jarvis Court is a public street, we don't believe that there would be much benefit to our project being part of theirs. The future homes that are coming in the area are in the Meridian School District, as indicated in that letter. And yes, it will have an impact on the school zones or the schools within the area, but it's also a method of the funding for schools comes through taxation of the residential homes within the area. So we believe that we could be a value to the school district in that regard. We respectfully request your approval to the R6 rezone before you tonight, and I'll stand for any questions you may have.
Okay, questions?
Not at this point. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you. Troy.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Just for the record, Troy Buchanan, CUNA Planning and Zoning Department, planning number 3. Mr. Mayor, council members, the application before you tonight, 18-04-ZC, is a rezone request. Solely a rezone request. The applicant is seeking just a rezone at this time for approximately 57.05 acres that currently are already in the city of CUNA and zoned as agriculture. For your decision tonight on the rezone, it will be a final decision. Staff notes that all of the noticing procedures have taken place and the property has been posted. Mailings went out to landowners within 450 feet, which exceeds the 300-foot minimum requirement, and has included anybody on that list that has requested to be mailed a notice. Cunamelma News published a public hearing notice as well. The information has all been assembled in your packet, including the meeting minutes from the neighborhood meeting that the applicant held with the neighbors prior to submitting the application. And I know that there was an extensive staff analysis about this project for this area. The city of CUNA has anticipated that this area not only will be in the city of CUNA, but it will be developed into residential subdivisions here in the city of CUNA as well. And the city has analyzed that and been preparing for that since as early as 2005. That is specifically why the wastewater treatment plant was placed advantageously where it is, which is directly south of Lake Hazel Road and 10 mile, approximately 950 feet, or 850 feet, approximately. The applicant has supplied everything that staff has asked them for. They're requesting this R6 designation for their zone, rather than the current agriculture zone, so that they can build a single-family home residential subdivision. It conforms with the CUNA Comprehensive Plan map. That map was included in your packets for your consideration, and that map is actually a second version of what I've seen in my time here at the city. Both maps have called out this as a medium density residential subdivision. The R6 does fit squarely in the middle of that designation. The applicant is in conformance with that map. There has been a lot of significant improvement by the city and also by developers within this general area, and those improvements have been going on for a number of years now. It's been contemplated that this would take place, and now we're on the doorstep of that happening. In the applicant's letter of intent, it states that if this does get approved, that the actual platting will come in somewhere near under 5 units per acre. So they've already committed to being under the requested zone. This is consistent with what the developer seems to be doing in other places in the city. The commission, as David pointed out, the commission on February 12th of this year did recommend approval to the city council. Staff would like to note that on page 9 of 46 of your packets, a couple of numbers were just missed. In section M on page 9 of 46, in section L, from the recommendation of the commission to the city council, the commission did request two additional conditions of approval, specific conditions of approval. Applicant will follow, obviously, all outlined conditions within the staff report, and it states number 12, but it was not added to the recommended conditions for council. Commission did also recommend that applicant be limited to 4.25 dwelling units within an R6 zone, and that's per gross acre. And if council would like to add those to the conditions of approval, simply state that, and staff will add them for the findings of fact when it returns back to this body for your decision. Other than that, I will stand for any questions you might have.
Questions for Troy? None at this time. Thank you. Troy, would you grab the sign-in sheets, please? So this is a public hearing. Is there anyone who wishes to testify that didn't get a chance to sign up? I'll ask again once towards the end if somebody gets an ask. But, all right. So we'll go ahead and... As I name you off, if you signed up to testify, if you would come up to the mic up here, state your name and address for the record. Jeremy Woodland.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. Council. My name is Jeremy Woodland. I reside at 1990 Jarvis Court. And my comments tonight deal with Jarvis Court, mostly the connectivity of Jarvis Court to the future Caspian subdivision. We want to be respectful and reasonable in our requests. We understand the property owner's rights to develop this property. Obviously, we would rather see a hay field like we see now than a bunch of homes, but we realize that's not going to be the case. So one thing that we feel that we can address is this connectivity issue. I'm just going to state a few points that are in this letter that you've been given. The current existing condition of Jarvis Court is not capable to handle this amount of traffic. It's just an asphalt road with no curbs, gutters, sidewalks, or anything like that right now. 100% of our residents in our subdivision are opposed to having Jarvis Court connect to this subdivision. And we just have, you know, concerns about safety with it more and more cars going down our street. And like the engineer said, sorry, I just lost my train of thought there.
I do that all the time.
Yeah. Okay. One other thing that I have a question about, they stated that the effective density would be 4 point some per acre gross. Okay, so there's a substantial amount of this property that is not buildable because of some power lines, and there's also an easement there that they can't build on. So I realize the gross density is set to 4 point something, but I'd be curious to know what the actual net density is. You know, once those unbuildable areas are taken out of the total acreage of this property.
Okay.
And so those are mostly my points. You know, we'd be happy to see Jarvis Court be an emergency access only. I think that's probably maybe one of our best case scenarios in this whole scenario. And I guess that pretty much concludes my testimony.
Okay, thank you. Questions for Jeremy? No? Okay, thanks. Dale Voris?
Mayor, City Council members, my name is Dale Voris, and I reside at 1710 West Jarvis Court, Meridian, Idaho, and I am opposed, for the record, I am opposed to the suggested connectivity from Jarvis Court to the Caspian Addition subdivision. The rezone application for the Caspian Addition indicated that the ACHD staff was supportive of the new local street connection to Jarvis Court, and to reiterate, I'm opposed to that. In all cases, the widening of Jarvis Court will destroy the existing landscaping and diminish the aesthetics of the existing curb appeal. Also, the addition of curbs and gutters will destroy the rural setting appeal which currently exists. The properties in Patriot Ridge Estates, which are serviced by Jarvis Court, have unique one-acre minimum requirements. I feel the uniqueness of this rural setting will be destroyed if Jarvis Court is used as a connection for the Caspian Addition subdivision. The approved platted Caspian subdivision to the south allows for the traffic pattern from the Caspian Addition to be routed south onto Lake Hazel. The recent developed subdivisions and future CUNA High School on Linder will create additional traffic along Linder, making the Jarvis Court-Linder intersection extremely dangerous. I feel the alternative routes could be platted through the existing platted Caspian subdivision. Only four members of our homeowners association are going to speak tonight, but I would ask that if possible, the members who are actually opposed be allowed to stand up to be recognized.
Okay, sure.
Thank you.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Did anybody have any questions?
No.
No.
Thank you.
Mayor, for the testimony, because it wasn't verbal, if they could stand one more time so that we could take a head count,
we'll
so I can make that note.
Count. Okay.
Thank you.
I get 16?
Yep.
Unless you count the chief, he's standing in the back. Chief, are you opposed? I made the attorney laugh. That's a good one. Kenneth Bogard?
I don't
Oh, okay. All right, very good. Tim Evans.
Tim Evans, and I live at 1852 West Jarvis Court, Meridian. I served as president of the Patriot Ridge HOA for nearly 12 years. During that time, I followed the farmland, now known as Caspian and Caspian Edition, closely. Over those years, I have had numerous conversations with the original owner, Rich Jarvis, CUNA Planning and Zoning, and most recently, Tim F. I have numerous times asked all parties about making Jarvis Court, if the land were to be developed, a feeder street from any development such as Caspian Edition. I always got polite answers. Jarvis is not wide enough. It is very unlikely, and don't worry about it. It's 8 years away, and it's up to the ACHD. I was at the CUNA Planning and Zoning meeting on February 12th, and was surprised that the CUNA planners were looking at the feeder connection as a real possibility. Making Jarvis Court a feeder from Caspian Edition would devastate our subdivision by greatly increasing traffic flow. Jarvis Court is currently a dead-end street, so let me go on the record as homeowner in Patriot Ridge. I am opposed to making Jarvis Court a feeder street to Caspian Edition. I hope to get a chance to review the preliminary plat Caspian Edition. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Did anybody have any questions for Mr. Evans?
Okay.
Thank you very much. And then we have Robert Olson.
Good evening. My name is Robert Olson, and I reside at 1650 West Jarvis Court, Meridian. And I, too, as a homeowner of the Jarvis Court, or excuse me, of the Patriot Ridge area, am opposed to the connectivity that is being proposed between our subdivision and the new one. At one end of our street, Jarvis Court, there is a sharp corner that has to be negotiated. And like any time, you have to slow down for that type of thing. This is a particularly small radius curve, meaning you have to slow down quite a bit more and make a hard right turn or left, depending on which direction you're going. When we add, or if we add, another right-hand turn almost immediately thereafter, you've got two right back-to-back, and not only am I concerned about the increased traffic, but now I'm concerned about the safety issues, particularly at those corners. You have the possibility in inclement weather of people sliding off the road into someone's property that's already on that corner. So I'm more than a little concerned about that. Everyone's seen that type of thing in inclement weather. Winding up in someone's yard is clearly not to our advantage. So I think with the much increased traffic of a relatively densely packed subdivision adding to ours, we'll see that likelihood go up immensely. The second point I'd like to make is our subdivision is a, we have a good working relationship with one another. We have a neighborhood watch program. It's more of an informal one, but we look after one another pretty well. We keep track of one another's homes, the cars that are going to and from there. And frankly, having a new, you know, much more increased traffic on that kind of puts that away. We don't have that. I recognize that person. I recognize that car anymore. So we're pretty concerned about the effectiveness of our neighborhood watch on one another. It's a serious issue. Increasing the traffic, increasing the density of the, you know, the people coming and going in our neighborhood is going to decrease the effectiveness of that, and we're concerned about that. And I'd like to make my opposition known to this connectivity from our neighborhood into the new subdivision. That's all I have. Any questions for me? I'd be happy to answer them.
Questions for Robert?
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. And was there anybody else who didn't get a chance to sign up that wishes to testify? Yeah, if you want to come up, I'll have you sign the sheet. There. It is there. Very good. Thank you.
So my name is Marshall Stimson. I reside at the 5831 South Linder Road, also a resident of this subdivision. My remarks are not on Jarvis Court, the through street. I wish to talk a little bit about the subdivision in general. Obviously, with this addition, all of us are affected. Our quality of life goes down a little bit, and we have to deal with traffic and all of the things that come with mass amounts of people in one area. We're willing to accept that. Nice growth happens. But we want to advocate for one thing, and it was brought up by Commissioner Geely at the last planning and zoning meeting, where she said, or he, I don't know if it's a he or she, but it says, I would like to, the applicant, Mr. Eck and his company, to look to investigate additional opportunities for transitional lots, especially along Jarvis Court, for those where those are 1-acre lots. I know the applicant has been quite creative in other subdivisions in minimizing the number of backyards that back up upon large acre, 1-acre lots. I would encourage the applicant to do that. And so I just have a few concerns, and I share these are concerns that are shared with all of our residents, and that is that when you have a whole bunch of low-income housing that comes in, you can potentially attract lower-caliber people. Crime can go up. We're concerned about that. We're concerned about the fact that right now, many of our lots are 1 acre, and by putting, you know, lots, smaller lots next to our 1 acre lots, that our property values are gonna plummet because of just that, you know, having lower density or higher density housing close by in proximity. So, and the last concern is the fact that a lot of us have animals, and we're concerned with that many people backing up against our backyards that we'll have issues with people climbing the fence, getting their balls out of our pastures or whatever it is. So we would advocate with Commissioner Geely, as she mentioned, Mr. Eck has done this in the past, and we would advocate that he would please consider to do it again. We kind of feel like, you know, in some ways our interests are kind of taking a back door to this new development. So really want to advocate to you to protect our interests, and ask that you please consider this proposal. Thank you.
Recess. No. Thank you very much. Was there anybody else? All right, very good. So that is all I have signed up to testify. Rebuttal.
Good evening, Mayor, Council members. My name is Tim Eck. I live at 6152 West Half Moon Lane, Eagle, Idaho. I'm the applicant. We've been through this arena so many times with the connectivity requirements and the connectivity policies that are required within the city of CUNA and required by the Ada County Hobby District. Their road is not what would be built in a higher density subdivision today. The road that they have is exactly what would be built in a 1 to 5 acre lot subdivision today. It's identical to what we went through at the previous plat that we brought forward. I don't have control over the connectivity that lies solely within the highway district. We do not have a plat yet. We have a layout. We have a pretty good idea what's going in there. I wasn't required to limit the density to 4.25. I offered to limit it to 4.25. Our layout is currently at 4.01. If I was one lot less, I wouldn't need to be medium density. I'd be low density. We do have a fair amount of open space, about 10% open space. There's a large green belt as a result of the power line easement through the project. But as a result, that does create usable open space. It will eventually continue to be a green belt from one side of CUNA to the other as development occurs under that power line. We'll be improving that with some landscape improvements and, you know, pathways and lawn. We're reluctant to put a buffer zone in here because of the large amount of open space. We're, like I said, we're at 4.01 units per acre. The only way to put buffer lots is to lose lots. And if I took one lot out, I wouldn't be medium density anymore. Again, as they stated, you know, where the buffer would be is up against their pasture areas. It's the backsides of their parcels. You know, it's where their livestock live. And as a requirement of the CUNA policy, we will have a 6-foot vinyl fence along the entire subdivision boundary bordering their property. So, you know, the likelihood of a kid wanting to climb over a 6-foot vinyl fence, I guess you can't stop kids from being kids, but if the ball goes over the fence, I guess that goes one way or the other. They could be climbing over, or kids on our side could be climbing over. As you know, when we come forward with the preliminary plat, there will be an exhaustive traffic impact study that will analyze all the traffic flows, recommendation, mitigation requirements. It will, you know, comply with the highway district policy and the city code when the plat comes forward. But right now, we're just looking for a zoning of R6 with a limitation to the gross density of 4.25 units per gross acre. And with that, I will stand for any questions.
Okay, Mr. Woodland had mentioned that there was quite a bit of area that was unbuildable, so I'm assuming the power line area where the pathway and that's going to be. And so his question was, when you take that out, what is the actual lots per acre?
I have never done the calculation because we never calculate it that way. It's the density calculation. In CUNA, every project I've been involved with is per gross acre.
Right.
But even though the power lines are there, it is still usable open space. It's not like an open ditch that would be considered unusable open space. You just can't build under it, but it is still viable, usable open space.
Okay. Any other questions for Mr. Eck? Richard?
I have one question, Tim. ACHD staff recommendations, and I guess I've read this so many times I've probably confused myself, Jarvis Court, an existing local roadway, abuts the site's northeast property line. As part of any future development application on the site, improvements to Jarvis will be required, including but not limited to pavement widening and the construction of curb, gutter, and 5-foot wide sidewalk abutting the site. Does that mean that's your responsibility, or if they did an improvement on Jarvis, they would have to do that?
Where it abuts my site. So right there.
Okay.
So where Jarvis Court comes and turns and actually abuts our site, I'm responsible for widening that piece of Jarvis Court probably 250 feet on one side and building sidewalk, curb, and gutter to current standards.
Okay.
So it will, that function will be strictly where it abuts our site, not all the way from the
okay.
river.
Okay. Thank you.
And so then the,
thank you, Mayor.
The sharp curve is, does that road enter into the subdivision?
If I can approach the map.
Sure.
The sharp turn you're talking right. about, there would, if connectivity is mandated, there would be a stub street or a street connected right here.
Okay.
And
so it's kind of, I think it was.
It looks like about halfway up.
Halfway between the sharp curve and the cul-de-sac.
I'll hit this with the pointer.
Oh, there you go.
Right about there. Basically, about 120 feet from this property line would be a street coming in. ACSD mandates the connection. That's where it would be. Our layout, we've taken every measure possible to make the layout in that corner as complicated to get to that location as possible. It's not like a straight shot to get in there. It's a difficult property to lay out because that easement, power line easement, runs from here diagonally through the site. So we're like two triangle sites on each side with a couple of crossings. You can put roadways underneath that easement, but you can't build under it. You can put play structures under it with as long as you maintain the minimum vertical separation to the wires. But you can't build a combustible structure under it. We spent a lot of time with our layout in that corner trying to make it as complicated as possible for the traffic to want to use Jarvis Court.
To try to dissuade them from using
yes.
it, yeah.
And so for this initial phase, then there's only one way in, one way out.
No. The connection to Jarvis Court, as a single point of ingress and egress, would only allow 30 lots. I believe they've got, 18, 19, 20 lots on that court already. So if we tried to develop a phase connecting back there first, we'd only be able to develop, 8 or 10 lots. And sewer, water, pressurized irrigation, everything's out here. Development will work this direction. So getting back to the Jarvis Court connection would not happen for a very long time because everything we had to connect to is at the opposite side of the project. Actually, right now, our sewer, water, pressurized irrigation services are right there. So you can see there's a long way to go to get back there. Sewer, however, does run all the way down Lake Hazel for the entire mile, but water and PI all have to be brought into the site, which will be done as Caspian develops. Eventually, we'll get back to this property and continue, but it'll be a while because you don't just run out of half a mile and start there and then deadhead in all those utilities.
Okay. Further questions?
I don't think so. Do you have anything else, Rich? You look like you're Thank you.
I was just reading Ada County Highway's suggestions. It's called Staff Comments and Recommendations, and they're applying to Jarvis Court, an existing local roadway abuts the site's northeast property line. As part of the future development application on the site to Jarvis will be required, yet the title is Recommendations. One seems a little contrast to the other.
I think it's because we only have in front of us today the rezone, and those things wouldn't be required until we get to final plat.
Right.
But they're just kind of giving you a heads up that this is something you're going to need to be thinking about.
Again, when you're going through ACHD, everything is done at staff level, and there are staff recommendations, and then it has to be adopted before the staff report comes out. And once the staff report comes out and is accepted, then it's a requirement, no longer a recommendation.
Okay.
Staff can also recommend variances and things like that. Those sorts of things then have to go before the ACHD commission for approval. Once they have that approval, then the staff report comes out with the variance or deviation granted, and then it's, again, requirements. So at this level, it is just recommendations, but the recommendations are following all of their policies and their requirements.
Thank you, Tim.
How many phases are the original Caspian sub, roughly, do you know? I know it's on there somewhere.
I thought in our packet it said 9.
I know I've read it, but
we're currently 11 phases with that phasing right there. It fluctuates. It varies. We have to try and control our phasing with market demand, and then, you know, our stub street limitation. We can't extend a stub street more than 150 feet without putting in a temporary turnaround facility, which is just, you know, throw money in the ground and dig it up, throw it away. So our phasing gets very complicated for those reasons. Where can we stop? Sometimes we have no choice. Sometimes we have to look at the sewer main lines, the water, how it's all going to get there, and then try and stop at points where we're not wasting money putting in temporary turnarounds. But currently that layout is for 11 phases. And the extension would probably be 5 to 6 more. So that's a lot of years up there.
Tim, could you show me where Bellucci Street will be? Is that way down on the bottom? Is that coming up?
Anything that dead ends on this property boundary would be extended based on ACHD requirements. If I don't know if that's one of the roads you're looking at, Richard.
Bellucci?
Mm-hmm. Bellucci.
And what does it say? It will be
consistent with ACHD continuation of streets policies. It should be the south site south property line. I'm assuming where your finger is north.
Yeah.
So south would be one of those streets down there, maybe?
You know, I think it may have been renamed at one time. If you're talking the south, the Harsh Site south boundary, I believe that would have been here.
Okay.
At one time, I do not think. But that's not even with this application. That goes back to Caspian. Well, I believe there was only one connection to this out parcel here.
Okay.
But I don't see a Bellucci. We have stub streets to each of these parcels, as is required. The mid-mile comes up. We were instructed to put the mid-mile to one side or the other of the section line. So because this property was already built to the section line, we pulled the mid-mile.
Okay.
further questions?
No.
You're right.
No, I'm fine.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thanks.
So, do you want to leave the public hearing open for a little bit so you get a chance to get through some more of that, Richard?
I'm fine.
Okay.
Are we wanting to close evidence presentation and proceed to deliberation?
Have we closed to public testimony?
No, not yet.
That's the question.
Okay.
Yeah,
that's why I wanted to make sure you were
okay.
Ready for that.
I'm fine. I'm fine.
Good.
I'm good.
I'm sorry. I still get mixed up. Should we actually have a motion for that?
Bill Geagrey, city attorney. I recommend that you do it. It makes it clear that
okay.
You are now going to proceed just to deliberate on the matter.
I move we close evidence presentation and proceed to deliberation.
Second.
Motion made and seconded to close evidence presentation and proceed to deliberation. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? That motion carries.
The majority of comments are about the roadways, and I'm certainly sympathetic to those types of concerns. We don't have any control really over the master street planning. It's ECHD's domain. But I would note that even if we approve the rezone tonight, that doesn't mean that we have approved a street layout. That's part of the final plat process, and ACHD would still need to consider the proposed layout and all that kind of stuff. So there would be opportunities to attempt to persuade them to perhaps approve a variance or something of that nature. It was tried in another subdivision that we looked at. It wasn't approved in that case, but it doesn't mean that they wouldn't, you know, automatically that they would deny it in another. So that's certainly something that can be considered and pursued. Do you guys have anything, any thoughts?
I guess for me, looking at what's below that and what's coming in, I really wish we could do a little less density in there closer to those other larger lots. I know we're trying to get some diversity, but I think we got quite a bit of that down below for the smaller lots, and I just think it's a good idea to put some buffer between some of these larger lots and a little more densely populated subdivisions. And that would be basically my only comment on that.
I wouldn't be opposed to that either. I don't know what's currently proposed, though.
I mean, where we kind of agreed that was the thing to do up there by Lunder Farms or whatever. I can't remember the name of that sub, but same thing. If we could, I don't know. Two houses behind each one of those, I think, is what we ended up on that 1 acre sub.
I think it was more of a, like, gross 2 per acre.
Yeah.
So we weren't, like, specifically dictating
right.
How many lot lines could touch. But that's my recollection.
What are your thoughts on that, Richard?
You know, when I first read this, that it was an R6, I was totally against it. I think an R4 would be more appropriate, but it seems like Mr. Eck has already met me with, if they apply the 4.25 per acre, I would be agreeable to it from a R6 with the mandate of a 4.25. I think Brianna pretty much hit the road issue. I think most of the roads we have no control over. Ada County has all the control on the road sidewalks and the right-of-ways, so our hands are kind of tied to that. But I would highly suggest, like Brianna said, that when Ada County reviews this, if you have any objection, that you go and physically object to the opening of Jarvis. That's where it's going to have to be. The decision will have to be made there. We have no control over that. So I will say that I've been fairly happy with Tim Eck and his construction company personally in trying to work with his neighbors. So I think if you communicate with Mr. Eck and his engineer, I think you'll find that they'll be compatible to some of your issues. So, but again, at 4.25, I think that is in line with what I would like to see in the city anymore, rather than R6. So,
one other thing that I wanted to point out about traffic is I don't know if it was clear to everybody when Tim was talking about making it hard to get to Jarvis. So that was something that we saw in another subdivision where there were resident concerns about connecting to an existing sub that had larger lots, and they laid the streets out, so there were a lot of turns you would have to take in order to use that way out of the subdivision. And the idea is that people don't want to, like, the more times you have to slow down and turn, and it lengthens your commute. And so if there are more direct ways that you can get out of the sub, it's likely that people are going to take those. So I was heartened by the fact that Mr. Eck also suggested that their preliminary layout, which we haven't seen yet, but that it would include quite a few turns to make it less appealing for people to take Jarvis out. So that's something else that that I will look for in the final plat if we approve the rezone, and something else that, you know, that you guys could ask for or keep an eye out for to make sure that it, you know, is to your liking as well. Any other discussion from anybody?
Yeah, in a minute.
I do have one thing. Yeah. It's not relating to the road, but I guess it'll be for Troy. Exhibit B6 is a statement from Meridian Fire because it's their boundary or their protection district. And in the notes up on page 8 of 46 under M, it says you'll have to, let's see, M1C says the CUNA Fire District shall approve flow. That should probably say Meridian or something, I'm guessing.
Yes,
yeah,
should.
Just figured I'd point it out.
Yeah.
It's rare I find a mistake like that. But
catch.
There you go.
Did you say you had something, Joe?
Yeah, so kind of back to my original comment. If I look at that 57 acres and then we figure that's an R4, that's about 228 homes in there, I still think that there needs to be a little bit more buffer in between there. I think that's a lot of lots. In that area that abuts these acre properties in there. And I realize when the lots get bigger like that, that's what makes it more difficult to have curb gutter and sidewalk and all those things, because that's usually why those subdivisions don't have those, is because it's because of the cost and what it would cost for a lot in a subdivision like that. But I'm really just uncomfortable with that many homes being that close to a subdivision like that out in the middle out there. So I don't know if there's any way you can cut them back a little. I mean, you're already at four. If we removed a few of them and made it three, that's still 100 and whatever that would be, 70 homes in there. I'm just uncomfortable with that many homes back in that spot like that.
Rather than looking at an overall reduction in the density, so rather than saying go from a 4.01 to a 3, what would we think about just asking for a particular density just for anything that abuts one of the lots or something like that? I don't know if it would end up being six of one, half dozen of the other, but if that's what the concern is, it seems like we should attempt to do something like a transitional strip instead of changing the zoning for the whole lot.
Right, right.
If you take 228 homes using Ada County Highway District 9.44 trips per day, you're at about 2,200 vehicle trips a day out of that subdivision.
Yeah. What are your thoughts, Greg?
I mean, I'm all for, you know, blending it like we did in the other one, you know, more of basically what you said, not saying, okay, only two per or whatever, but coming up with something there. I don't know what's exactly right, but I mean, I would like to see it like we did with the other one where it was acre to, you know, basically they were going to have four out their back door. That one ended up, I believe, at two, if I remember correctly, but something similar to that, you know, just to help with, like it's been brought up where, you know, they have an acre with a, say, a 4,000 square foot house, and it abuts up to a R4 that has a 1,800 square foot house, and it devalues their property. So if we could do something that kind of blended it into the sub better.
Yes,
Mr. Mayor and members of the council, if you are considering additional conditions or more restrictive conditions that have been recommended by staff or have been discussed with the applicant, my recommendation would be that you open the hearing back up for additional testimony and that you might ask the applicant whether or not they would be willing to agree to some of these additional conditions if you determine you might impose them as a condition of the zoning, because otherwise you might pass an ordinance that would enforce conditions that they don't agree with, which I think could be problematic.
Okay.
City Attorney Bill Gigray, excuse me.
Shall I move we reopen the public hearing? So moved, I guess.
So do you want to just reopen the public hearing for the applicant to answer questions?
Sure. Can I be that restrictive?
Bill Gigray, city attorney. Yes, I think you can limit what you're going to open it up to, but I do think if you're talking about some extra conditions that are not part of the staff report that haven't been discussed, I really do think you should inquire of the applicant with regards to those matters.
I move we reopen the public hearing for receipt of additional testimony from the applicant and possibly staff as well.
Second.
Motion made and seconded to reopen the public hearing to question the applicant and possibly staff. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. We are open again for...
Tim, will you come talk to us?
Good evening again, Mayor and Council Members. Tim Eck, I'm the applicant, 6152 West Half Moon Lane, Eagle, Idaho.
Jarvis Court has an interesting configuration, if I can approach the map. We have this corner lot here that you could have lots wrapping around both sides,
mm-hmm.
whereas the rest of them are basically one. This corner lot here with lots that will wrap around it, and then basically these lots and these lots will have lots backing up to it, this lot being extremely wide. We have some flexibility. We can put, as we've done before, a form of a buffer strip in against these houses. But, again, I want to point out that, you know, all the houses are out here fronting Jarvis Court and 10 Mile, and in the back is all their pasture land where we're building next to their livestock. There is a bridle path aligned across here, which is an additional buffer zone that already exists, separating, and we will have 6-foot fence there separating us from them. But we could do attempt to limit our density contiguous to these lots. We do have, as I mentioned, we do have a lot of open space at 10 acres. That's part of why we're trying to maintain a reasonable lot size. And if we give up lots here, we're squeezing them in elsewhere, making some smaller lots. And we do that all the time. We can do that. I'd probably like to go a little tighter than 2 per gross acre. It's difficult to even calculate when you're talking gross acreage because it's generally to the center of the road. And so when you have a road that comes this way and a road that comes this way and no connectivity here, it's difficult to calculate that that gross acreage around a corner like that. Because where is this line when the street doesn't go through? Trying to say 2 lots against 1, 3 lots against 1. Well, 2 lots against this would be...
Yeah, that's why I was specifically trying to avoid
2 lots against
dictating,
here would be very complicated.
Yeah, lot lines. I thought that would be too challenging.
You know, if we could... Again, we need to have a little flexibility getting around here, but, you know, we could agree to a limited density where we're contiguous to their existing lots. I'd probably like to see a little more than 2 an acre, but we'll have to have some, you know, flexibility to work with staff to figure out what our actual acreage is around this corner. If it's a straight shot with the road cutting it off, it's easy. But in this case, with the configurations here, it's kind of hard to figure out when you're trying to figure out per gross acre where you're measuring to. Because normally it's the center of the street, but there's no street here.
So, do you think you were saying 2 might be hard? Like, would 2.5 work?
Well, with the exception of a lot like this, you know, I think they might be able to.
The reason I came up was just simply to point out it's really tough to redesign a subdivision on the fly.
Yeah.
Figuring it out, and it's really tough to limit a density that would work. Maybe the condition could be what we're willing to do, and apparently, obviously, Tim's willing to do. Again, this is David Crawford. is we could work with staff to limit the density in the preliminary plat process, so that the density would be less than the 4.25, but not less than, say, 2. So we could work it kind of in that range. We could work within that range, and the condition could simply be that the density is less than 4 and greater than 2 within that area.
I think I'd prefer, not that I doubt you guys are going to act in good faith, but I think I would prefer to establish a ceiling that's something different. So that's why I was kind of trying to feel out, like, do you feel like 2.5 might be doable? Can we say 3? Just so that we have more of a, established, because like I said, I don't doubt that you guys are always, you know, you negotiate in good faith, and I don't think you're going to try to do anything shady. But if we say something between 2 and 4, and it comes back at 4, which is what we've already talked about, then there really hasn't been any change or concession. You see what I'm saying? So that's why I wanted just there to be like a clear understanding of what the expectation would be just for that buffer zone, just for the edge.
Maybe plus 3, plus or minus a half.
So, 3.25, sold. No, just kidding. Go ahead.
Yeah, so if we went for 3 an acre plus or minus a half, that would mean that along this strip, we would be between 2.5 and 3.5.
Okay.
But it would have to be uniformly spread. We couldn't have 2.5 right here and 3.5 the rest way. But if we agreed to 3 an acre density, we're going to have to play with this and understand that we're trying to accomplish that, because there's no fine line here as where it breaks off. Three units per gross acre with the flexibility to be between 2.5 and 3.5, just depending on how it lays out and fits. But that gives us the 3 an acre here. And keeping in mind, the entire plat is 4.01. Now, we asked for 4.25, give us a little flexibility. And you'll understand the reason we asked for the R6 is because of dimensional standards.
Mm-hmm.
We can't, if we stuck strictly with R4, we'll have lots that wouldn't qualify because they would be too small, because other lots are too big. But R6 gives us that flexibility. And if we'd agree to limit this to 3 with a range, an average of 3, but to be between 2.5 and 3.5.
What do folks think about that? Does that seem like a good compromise?
I think so.
Yeah, I don't have any problem with that.
Joe, thoughts? Good? Yeah. I appreciate you being willing to work with us on this kind of stuff.
Well, we always try to.
Yeah. Okay, so just to recap then, what I think we've all agreed to is rezoning at R6 with an actual density not to exceed 4.25, and the gross density for anything that butts up on Patriot Ridge would be a gross density of 3 plus or minus 0.5 acre, the idea being that we would have kind of a transitional strip, if you will. Is that? Come on up. I just want to make sure that I, like, we have it all, that we're all on the same page.
We're all part of Patriot Ridge.
Okay.
So
existing Patriot Ridge, or?
Probably the existing residential lots within the Patriot Ridge.
Okay. But the rest of it all sounded like an accurate recitation of our
contiguous lots within the Patriot Ridge residential subdivision.
Existing contiguous.
Brianna.
Yo.
I think that would have to be condition number 14 then.
I'm all over it. Okay. Yeah.
Could I ask Troy, would that be condition 14, since 13 addresses local, state, and federal laws?
For the record, Troy Buchanan,
I'm just going to say adding a condition of approval and not dictating what number it is, and then they can,
I can
figure it out.
Okay.
Does that work for you, Rich?
But yes, it would add another condition.
That would be under proposed order of decision by City Council.
Correct.
Okay.
Thank you, Troy.
And my note is my note correct that we have also neglected to include, no, we didn't follow all conditions within the staff report. We're good. Just making sure there's no issue here. Good? 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 Okay, thanks. Stand by.
There. Do we have to close the...
I'm all over it.
Okay.
try to not get
she got up early today.
Okay.
She's
on. You're on a roll. Okay.
Let's see. All right. I move. We approve case number 1807AN and 1805ZC with all the conditions listed within the staff report, and noting that although we are approving an R6 zoning, the actual gross density of the subdivision shall be no greater than 4.25 units per acre, and the gross and with a gross density of 3 plus or minus half an acre on the lots bordering the existing contiguous lots within Patriot Ridge, and that we close the public hearing, and that we direct staff to prepare the findings of fact, conclusions of law, and order of decision for approval by council at the next council on the next council meeting consent agenda.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second to approve case number 1807-AN and 1805ZC with the conditions that were mentioned, and also to close the public hearing in this matter. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? That motion carries. Thank you all very much.
Yeah, thanks everybody for showing up to testify. We really do appreciate the input.
Yeah, it looks right.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
He was working in Garden City, and it looked like he would be about an hour getting here, which might put him a couple minutes late.
All right. Bob's on deck.
All right, we'll go ahead and go to business item 7A, consideration to approve resolution number R29-2019. Bob Bachman.
Mayor and Council, for the record, Bob Bachman, City of Cuna Public Works Director. Just sort of kind of give you a real brief overview of what this is. A few months back, I had a meeting with our building department. We discussed the rapid amount of commercial growth we're seeing and some of the systems, mechanical systems we're seeing in that. And we have decided that we were going to come to a point where maybe some of the qualifications we have aren't what we need for some of the mechanical stuff we're seeing. And just to make sure that the consumer is getting what they're paying for and a safe product, we felt it was best to bring in somebody, quite honestly, more qualified than us to look at some of the commercial projects. We looked at a lot of the other cities have the state do it. If the state does it, they get 100% of the permit fees. Pretty much half the jurisdictions do the state, half the jurisdictions use a private contractor, and some do just hire employees. We felt at this time it was best to just bring in a contractor like we do for the plumbing and electrical, and just share the revenue with them. And it'll be for the commercial only, no residential. So I would stand for any questions.
Questions for Bob?
Our city engineer isn't qualified to do this?
No, sir.
Okay.
Again, I appreciate that it was reviewed by legal. I don't see any of the stuff that I had taken issue with before. Not that you've had that problem, but just generally. Looks fine to me.
If it looks fine, I do have to read in. I had it reviewed by legal a day or two late, and he would like me to add this little paragraph in here.
Okay.
So if I could read that in, and at the same time, he also said it was a really good document, so I appreciated that, but I didn't write it. But. So we would like page 6, section 3, general provisions, paragraph W, changed to say, in the event any party shall file suit or action at law or equity to interpret or enforce this agreement, the provisions of Idaho Code section 12-117 or any subsequent amendment or recodification of the same shall apply to the determination of the prevailing party and the award of reasonable attorney fees, witness fees, and other reasonable expenses.
Yeah, Mr. Yes, Mayor, Mr. members of the council, I appreciate Bob, and I would back him up on. I looked at that agreement as one of the better agreements I've ever seen. Sometimes with engineers, they have indemnity and all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
You got to weed out of them, and this was really clean. I thought from that point, and I'm sure Bob wrestled them to all of that. What I try to, and this is something I've mentioned with my partners, I think Idaho Code Section 12-117 controls statutorily the issue over attorney's fees and costs in any litigation between a private entity and a government entity such as a city. And so I want to just kind of get, this is what we did with Falcon Crest, just get a boilerplate. Bob will know this is what I want to do, and I just think that's what we should have in all our agreements. So that's the only reason I made that comment. It's not a big deal, but I think it's a law.
All right. Well, with that in mind, I move we approve resolution number R29-2019 with the modification as read aloud by Bob.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded to approve resolution number R29-2019 with the additions read out loud by Bob. Any further discussion?
Mayor?
Yes.
Bob, how much does this $30,808 buy us?
That's the next
item.
That's
the next item.
Pardon me?
That's not part of it.
Oh, I'm sorry.
He's getting eager.
Proceed, Bob.
It doesn't get Bob anything. All right. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? That motion carries. 7B, consideration to approve $30,808 from contingency for a new position in the Planning and Zoning Department, Wendy Howell. And actually, I will kind of start this because I'm the one that started this whole thing. So we've been kind of moving some positions around in City Hall and trying to get things in other departments that kind of make better sense. And so what, in essence, I ended up doing was making Bob have a little more work and Wendy being understaffed a little. So that's kind of how this came about. So I'll take the blame for that one. But Wendy, go ahead.
I guess I will just answer Richard's question. What will it buy us?
That's a good one.
Hopefully a very good planner, but what I'm going to advertise is for a planner one or planner two in hopes of getting a larger pool of applicants, and then it will be based on their experience, where they'll fall into the range. It will be quite a large range, but this is like the worst or the best case scenario, I guess, however you look at it.
This is the cheapest we would expect to get, is that?
Most expensive.
Most expensive. That doesn't seem like very much.
That's for the remaining
fiscal year. That makes more sense, yeah. I was thinking calendar year also.
I did too when I first saw it. I'm like,
doesn't seem like enough, yeah.
Yeah, and so basically where we're at with that is we've just, as everyone knows, we've been experiencing this growth at an incredible rate. I think that last week the building permits on new construction were 38, I believe. And so, it's just everybody back there is running hard trying to keep up, and that's kind of how we ended up switching stuff around, and now we need more help. So
no problem, makes sense to me. I move we approve the expenditure of $30,808 from contingency for a new position in Planning and Zoning Department.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded to approve $30,808 from contingency for a new position in the Planning and Zoning Department. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. Mayor and council announcement. Bobby, did you want to give us that update?
Yes, I do.
Before you had a chance to ask.
We've been working on it. We had a little apron put around the splash pad, and we're going to be doing some dirt work here in the coming days to get ready to put it together. So far we're on schedule to do the Memorial Day. Is that Memorial Day? Yeah, Memorial Day opening.
Great.
Ask me. Richard. Bobby. Down there on the splash pad, there's a big metal box sticking up with a iron plate on top. It'll be on the west side.
That's the lightning collector.
Is that box going to stay there? Is that permanent? It looks like
I remember seeing a rod, but I don't remember a box. There are two square vaults that we have that we just put in concrete. They might have been just sitting there.
The concrete's already poured around this, and it's sticking up about that high with the metal plate on top. And it's on the west side by the ball field. It just looks like kids are just looking to get hurt on that. So,
is it an attractive nuisance?
Come by tomorrow. We'll walk out there and look at it.
Okay, we will. Because I was there today and I don't remember seeing this, but I was also looking at something else.
But I could anticipate it being a problem with kids running and then jumping on it, slipping and flying. And
I like the lightning collectors.
Mm-hmm.
It's part of our new energy saving initiative.
Has anybody else been down there?
No.
No, I'm scared to look.
Have you? You haven't seen the box elevated out of the concrete?
No.
Maybe I was wrong place. Do you know what I'm talking about, Bob?
I'm not guilty of this.
Oh, okay.
All right. Mr. Gigray.
Mr. Mayor, members of the council, just a quick legislative update, if you want.
I know.
Oh, no, he's bringing a binder.
Of course. Mr. Mayor, members of the council, just a brief update as the legislature hopefully is winding their way out of town. It appears at this point, with regards to matters that I thought be of interest to the city, House Bill 87, which provides additional exemption from property tax of harvest production and raw agricultural commodities on non-farm storage and commodity, was signed by the governor and will become law. That may affect some of your taxable property. I'm not sure, because you do have some ag ground within the boundaries of the city. House Bill 103, this was signed by the governor. This one is the one that requires that we include, if you ever do a special levy election,
the dollar per 100,000 impact it would have on taxpayers. So that has to be added to the ballot information and question. The next item, House Bill 160 was signed by the governor on the 19th, and that will become law, and it adds a new provision on sole source purchases, and I don't know if we've done those, but we don't have to declare an emergency anymore when we go through those. So if we get a sole source purchase, Bob or whatever worked with me, we'll get the language figured out to meet this change in the statute. House Bill 193, which was amended, this has to do with a requirement that the State Tax Commission review any changes in taxing boundaries, and if they're going to disqualify for errors, they have to do it within 28 days of the date that they receive the description and the map. They have been, I guess, delayed in some instances, so that would help if we did an annexation and they weren't going to accept it. Then they've got to make that decision within 28 days of when they get the map rather than just sit on it for a long time. House Bill 217A, this has to do with revenue allocation area legislation, and this is to do with urban renewal. If we ever went with a revenue allocation area, this one looks like it's going to become law. It was passed by the House and by the Senate with some objections. And then has been back and forth as amended, and it is the engrossed bill has been referred to Judiciary and Rules in the Senate to finish this off. So we'll watch that. And this is the one that will require an election if 55% approval, if more than 51% of any multi-purpose sports stadium complex, the cost exceeds $1 million. And I don't know that would have anything to do with the city of Boise, but it might. So we'll see. My hunch is that'll probably become law. Senate Bill 1047, this is, I think this was signed by the governor last month, and this allows, I think, for a little more liberal governance with regards to political subdivisions joining other government entities and associations for cooperative purchasing programs where the goods and services have been or being offered as a result of some competitive solicitation process. And I'm aware that there are organizations like in Houston, and there's some big ones out there. I think Minneapolis is another one. And I know we reviewed them for the fire district, and they didn't really quite qualify with our law. This may loosen that up to give you some more options with regards to piggybacking off of a much broader spectrum. House Bill 91, this exempts charter schools from impact fees. They are not a taxing entity, and before they were not exempted, now they are, and that's been signed, and that'll become law. For as far as cities are concerned, House Bill 25, this is the one that says that as long as property, even though it's enclaved, is used for agricultural purposes, that you can't annex it without the permission of the owner. And that for some, there's got to be some city where this was going on because there was an emergency clause with this, which I found interesting. And also, House Bill 108, this has to do with building inspectors and the use of an inspector hired that has to have a valid international code residential building inspector certification. There's a new provision that you can hire one with a six-month provision as long as some of their approvals are overseen by a licensed one, because I know there's a shortage out there. That was signed by the governor, and that will become law. And the last one I want to talk about, which I think is a good thing for cities, is that House Bill 97 was signed by the governor on the 22nd of March. And it provides that anyone who grants public access to recreational purposes pursuant to a lease or other agreement with a government entity, as long as they don't charge individuals who use it, qualifies for immunity from premises liability. And if you remember, there's that recreational premises liability that if you open up your land for recreational purposes and allow people to go on it, you're not going to be liable. And you have immunity. Well, this bill extends that statute so that if we wanted in our parks project where you wanted to go out and say you wanted to open up some land and the property owner didn't really want to sell to the city, we could enter into maybe a lease agreement, or we could enter into an agreement where they would allow, without a lease, but they would agree, we could enter into an agreement that they would allow the public to access a recreational area that's within their land, then we can guarantee them under the statute that they're not going to have any liability. So you, that's an additional tool out there you might think about if you come into a roadblock. We really don't want to buy this land, but if that property owner would open this up so that people could have access, we could enter into an agreement and provide them with some immunity. And so we'll try to, that's really my report on legislation. There were other bills in there. The ones that were going to give the cities more authority went to Ways and Means, which means they're going nowhere. The ones where they want to take it away, they tend to get a little more traction.
That's true. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Chief, did you have anything you wanted to talk about? Okay. Awesome. Anybody else? Meeting adjourned.